the epistles in the latter part of the New Testament, Jude, and now we start off with our four Gospels correlated.
We don't take any of them
verbatim, go right through like we do some other books, but some prominent parts that some will have something and then we'll have another, and together they make the whole of the Gospel. Now we have a lot of them, and I according to my figuring, and have to double up two times. So I think I'll make the two times at the first rather than that we did the first semester, get kind of caught and have to kind of rush it right at the last. So we'll probably try to have two tonight and two next Thursday, the Lord willing. So we have quite a few scriptures.
And I'd like to read most of that because there's the Gospels are about...
They center around one man. Who is it?
Yes, the Lord Jesus Christ. And we just had something about, pretty much about what we have basically, and our second lesson will be called His Birth. And the first one we'll call it The Announcement.
So we'll start reading it.
Now we don't have, we won't have just to read a certain passage all the way through, but there'll be, some of them I have are rather long.
So we'll get started.
He was announced.
It was announced that He would come, and I like to call it as one of His names,
is Emmanuel, which means, anybody remember?
God with us.
So we call this the announcement of the Son of God's joining humanity.
He joined us.
He's with us.
And as a man.
We'll have, the second lesson will be about His birth, and that's how He became a man. One of the first Old Testament announcements. First we'll have some Old Testament things in the Old Testament that refer directly to Him. Even though they might be in type, they refer to Him.
The first is presenting Him as a person,
but it's described as a branch.
And there's four references to that.
No, they aren't so long. We have the four scriptures applying to Him as the branch.
Looking up the meaning of a branch,
well, it's like what you know. The way the Greek
concordance gives it is a sprout
or a shoot, like something that goes off.
Now we have it here in our lesson, point A.
It's an offshoot of a central trunk and a basic root.
Well, the central trunk would be
God. And there is he's called, I believe, of the root
of David.
So, though he came through the line of David,
he had a
past. Not as a man, but he
certainly had a past.
And then it shows God's infinite wisdom in joining him to us.
That somehow has impressed me the last few years. The fact that he's not just a person separate, aloof, and way off there somewhere, as many think of him if they know believe he exists.
But he is a part of what we are, humanity.
And he saved our humanity.
Saved us from utter destruction.
Well, let's take the first scripture, and the first reader would go to Isaiah chapter 4.
And read verse 2, which describes him
as
each of these branches
have reference to him in a different character.
I mean, not like a different person, but different sides of the same person.
The first one,
you'll find out what he's called there. And each one of those also, we understand, applies and in its specific, to a specific gospel.
Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, each one have
they see him in this particular character,
unique for each one. And that's why we say we try to put them together to get the whole person, all we can of it, know about him. So let's turn to Isaiah chapter 4.
Verse 2, I'm going to start with you, Greg, and go around.
We've got one passage we'll go around several times.
But this one's a short one. Isaiah
chapter 4, verse 2.
So there he's called the branch of the Lord. Now the Lord there is the great name of God,
Jehovah. When you see that,
all four, in most versions of the that are written,
you see all four letters are capitalized. That's usually the Jehovah. And that Jehovah is the redemption name of God.
But we think of him as the branch of the Lord,
the branch of the Father.
The now personage who seems to...
Well, I believe we can safely say he had the Trinity.
By mutual choice,
not by any inferiority of one or superiority of another to the others. Great mystery and a beautiful mystery, but all we can do is
take it by revelation. There's nothing, no way our minds can figure out
the reality of the Trinity. And it's been corrupted by
people trying to figure it out. Just take it as he says it,
and when he gives us the faith to know that's true.
So he's called the branch of the Lord, of the
great Jehovah.
And he is called glorious, beautiful and glorious.
Well, he should be. But it's referring to him as coming the branch, an offshoot of God, but he's also, all of these are,
he becomes a man.
That's the central part. So he's a glorious,
and that refers to in that sense, the branch of the Lord, which would signify his deity. See, he says he's a branch off of the great personage that is God, the Holy Trinity. And it's beautiful and it's glorious. And the Gospel of John gives that. The Gospel of John, that one presents him as God. As the Son, of course, he's called the Son of God.
And that's because
the human part. He was God. Many people don't understand him, and I don't think they understand his greatness. But they like to think of him, even overdo that child, that babe business. It's true, and it's a beautiful thought, and that's how he started. We'll have in our next lesson. But we can't lose the sight of the fact that he was God, and all the prerogatives of God, all that God has, is still there. And that's one of the amazing parts. He's found out
that would show his great
ability as God to be able to hold that back. When he was here, he wasn't known as God for a long time. And when he was, many people couldn't see him that way because he looked too ordinary for any people to think that was God. But he did some rather extraordinary things even before his sacrifice for it. So let's go next to Jeremiah 23, verse 5. There you'll see another guise in this, but in the same general thought as the branch. Jeremiah 23, verse 5. All right, where does he come from there? how do we say? It's an offshoot, a branch. Of who there? I will raise unto David. See, he's a branch of David then. And that is the great mystery. And that's what the wise ones of Israel really, really were crossed up on and couldn't understand. How can he be God and a branch of David? Well, we'll dwell on that some, and I think we all know. And, of course, David is God's... Until this man reigns, he's God's idea of a king. He was king. He was God's choice. We've been reading at home in Samuel and seeing the choice of man, which God allowed, and he gave them the kind they wanted, Saul. But you see what a miserable failure he turned out to be. And God said he would raise up his king, and then he would be an example of the true king, the great king, which would be the branch that is Christ. And he's also David's branch. Now you find that it's related particularly to Matthew's gospel, the thought of the king, and it describes him as the kingdom of heaven and the king. Now in Zechariah, we have two of the branches in Zechariah, one of the so-called minor prophet, but he's not too minor, is he, if he has these important, allowed to give the truth of Christ and two other sides of this branch, being a branch. Zechariah, first we'll go to chapter 3 and read verse 8. All right, Missy, what kind of a branch? I mean, what characters of branches he said there?
Just before you read branch, what did you read?
Servant, yeah. So he was, a branch would be a servant. He was not ashamed. He called himself, he came to, not to be ministered unto, but to minister. He came to seek and to save, another time he said. And he actually came, and is joining humanity. He will be our ruler. We don't want to forget that. And we'll have a healthy understanding of it when we see him, and we know it now as he gives us faith more and more.
He is the king, but...
He came to serve us.
Now that, no wonder the
big minds don't accept him, because... With all of their talk, their purpose is not to serve somebody, it's to lord over them. They'll serve to a point to get to
the top. Everybody wants to be best,
be highest, and yet he came
as a servant, and he'll get to be highest because he was a servant.
I mean, that's the human side of it. But he's a servant of mankind, a servant of God and of mankind. Well, Mark gives him that character as a servant, Mark's gospel. We'll have more on that to show why we think he refers to him as a servant. Then in Zechariah chapter 6, let's read two verses to get the thought, 12 and 13. All right, now can you see an identification of him that you might think is the character he's showing there? Man, that's it. Now that's the whole thing we're seeing, but this is the one particularly signifies, points him out as a man. And that is the part that's stressed in Luke's gospel.
The Son of Man. Now Matthew has the term Son of Man quite a bit too. I've made the statement. I think Luke has the most, and check it up, it's pretty close. But it is, there's a sense of the character of Luke. Luke, when you read it, you get acquainted with it, you see it does have, he will go into more detail, and he'll give you some things that the others don't. And do you know what Luke's profession was in the world, his natural occupation? Physician, yeah. He was a doctor, and I would say a good one. And I don't think it was any kind of a fake or just a voodoo or something like that. I think he was a real physician and helped a lot of people. You know, that profession, now not to always try to take away credit, and you won't take away credit because they'll keep it, but they will give you the impression that nobody before ever really knew anything. It all happened in the last generation or two. Well, seemed like they have learned a lot of things, but I never could quite understand and think that God would go through some, getting close to 6,000 years, or just take the last, this past century about to finish, where everybody thinks the most that was ever learned about the human body was learned then. But I just can't quite think that God, who has dealt with man for 6,000 years, would never let them know anything about their own bodies or somebody else. Someone said, well, he meant that he would do everything. And that's something we just have to leave with him in our own personal experience, how much he will do. Christ died for everything, but it doesn't seem like he would left you in total ignorance about that's your greatest personal natural possession is your human body. So I would say that he was a good one. But what I notice there, he'll give you details. And that's a physician, an expert. They go into great details. I remember a wife telling about a young woman who was just finishing, I think, her time to go into the practicing physician. Says, you can see when she looks at you, of course, being a nurse, you'd see, you know how they act, looking through you, taking every sign you can about your present physical condition. And so Luke knew a lot about a man, not just as physical, but I would think they knew quite about their mental, their emotions, and everything. And he presents Christ as a man. Well, we know that, particularly by the time of the year that we've just passed, and our second lesson, next lesson will be on that. It has to be as a man, even as a babe. You know, we take that so lightly, and it's become, you know, just a byword, or just kind of everybody just, that's been stressed so long about the babe. But the more you think about it, just let yourself try to think about it. How could that have happened? And again, there's the wise men thinking, well, it didn't happen. He was just a natural birth like anybody else. He was like anybody else to a degree on the mother's, the birth and all, but it wasn't just like anybody else in every sense. How could he do it? The reduction, the seemingly things that he had to look like an abandon, but he didn't abandon, and that would be his deity. I remember hearing one brother tell a sister once that seemed to be stressing too much the human side of Christ. And I remember he said, and I thought I never got it, do not ever try to divest Jesus Christ of his deity. How can you look at that thinking of him as a babe? You can't. There's no way. You can't parallel. You can't, we're talking about correlate. That means to bring to a common ground. You can't hardly do about that God being a babe. But he was. You don't believe it, you don't believe much of anything. Because the basis of everything we are, have, and hope for is based on his virgin birth. You take that away, you have nothing. You have no claim on him at all. But he's joined humanity. He was born among us, born one of us. The next thing we have to show the announcing of in the Old Testament are the offerings of Moses, that Moses was offered and was the truth of giving in Leviticus. So we'll find them all pretty close together in Leviticus. So let's turn there and we'll read one of them from Leviticus 1, chapter 2, chapter 6, and chapter 4, Leviticus, that have to do with the very complicated and very detailed offerings that Israel asked to do in their worship of God as they became a nation. Okay, there's the first and perhaps one of the most fundamental. The burnt offering refers to Christ's voluntary sacrifice for us. See, it was used for an animal, the herd, and it says, but he was offered to the voluntary will of the offerer, and a male, and Christ was both. And it was voluntary, a burnt offering. That's given us in John's Gospel. That's announcing then that there's coming the one whom this offering represents. That was not those offerings. Also, we read that in Hebrews. We had it last year. The sacrifice and offerings I take no pleasure in. But Christ came as a man to offer himself, and that's what it's all pointing to. That's announcement then in itself. Kind of secluded and kind of hidden, but it's there. Then in chapter 2 and chapter 3, someone read both those verses, because that'll give two of the other offerings that were made representing him in another way. Now, I don't know why that's called the meat offering, because it is the meal offering. Fine flour is made of meal, it's the plant rather than the animal. And so, and then chapter 3, verse 1, so there was a sacrifice, the peace offering, the burnt offering, so the voluntary, Christ is a voluntary offering, and the peace offering, it has so much to do with the peace that it brings us between us and God. And Luke is the one that's privileged to show that. And the verses we'll have there later will be that have to do with his birth. And then in Leviticus chapter 6, verse 2, we'll have another of the offerings. Chapter 6, verse 2. Yeah, that's just to show that there was an offering, and it goes on, the offering was made to cover the sin, representing of someone that would be offering to cover sin. That's just one of the sin offerings. It's interesting, the first thing that God uses is an example of sin, isn't it? Not what men would choose. There's so many terrible things done. Lie, covet to keep something that he'd been entrusted with, and or take it away by violence, or has deceived his neighbor. If you were going to take the most egregious, horrible sin, would you choose one of those? Oh, no, those aren't too important, are they? Sin is always... There's no good in sin, no matter what it is. So the Lord, there was a peace offering, and that is what's given us. No, is that that's the trespass offering first, yeah. Trespass. And that's, I think that the difference between the trespass, that is a transgression of a known law, a rule, while just the sin offering is just of that inherent thing that is sin that is in us, and you can't escape either. If you have sin, you're going to see it. We can't really condemn the sinner and be so horrified that he sins. Why would we? He's a sinner. People may not think so, and they're taught not to think so, but they are. We are. We were. And so what can a sinner do but sin? Whatever it is, that's what he'll do. But there's an offering for it. And the announcement of it is given that it, and Mark is the one that stresses that side of Christ. Then we have the New Testament announcements, which in the Gospels themselves, that's what they're about. So let's go, first we'll read Matthew chapter 1. I'm not having to do much teaching in this, because the Scripture itself is the best teacher. It'll teach you. Matthew chapter 1, verse 1. It's announcement. What's it announcing? Next reader, Matthew 1:1. So Christ came in a certain generation, and that also refers to a line or stock of humanity you come from. Well, he came from, the oldest one there would be Abraham, but it also gives first, he was a son of David. They were very diverse in the time when they lived, but Christ is a descendant according to the flesh, according to his natural progeny, of natural life, of both of them. Both two of the great men of faith of the Old Testament. And so he's a descendant. Now in verse 18 to 25 in this same chapter, and that's a rather long one, so just take your turn, we'll go right around that one. That'll tell you the fact of the birth. That's where you get that name, God with us. That's the name meaning of Emmanuel. Yeah, so there we have two of his names, Jesus and God with us. And we'll have another one given in the second chapter. It makes pretty well his whole name. And then so the son of David, the fact is stressed there in both in these scriptures that he was a son of David, which brings him in what office shall we say of his? A king, yes. Whenever you see anything connected with David as a result, not just particularly that time, it has to do with royalty, with his rulership. In Mark chapter 1, now let's read verse 9 to 12. That's announcing him in a little different way. Now it's understood then that Mark represents the presentation of Christ as a servant. I might ask you the question there, what does Mark tell you about his birth? Well, it does say where he came from, yeah, but he wasn't born there, so it really doesn't tell you anything about his birth. He tells you nothing, but you know he was. It says he's a Jesus Christ, the Son of God. I used to wonder about that, and it seemed like, I don't think I'm the one that perceived authority of what somebody else had read. It said, and I believe it makes sense. Who's interested in the birth of a servant? Who cares? See, we're not quite as class conscious as a lot of people in the world, and there is some of it there, but not quite so much. And they were different at a lower level of humanity. The only thing people are interested in, they do their work and serve them, right? And they don't care anything else, where they came from or anything like that. They're just their servant. So Mark doesn't say anything about it. Now, one of the things that characterizes his book relating to Christ as a servant is that word that you see there, straightway. Okay, it said in that in the book of Mark, it said and the same word is sometimes said immediately, sometimes anon, which is an old word for right away, and straightway is we have straightway here. Yeah, straightway, right now. And that same word is used about 45 times in Mark. Isn't that something? And then there's another word, driveth, or spirit drove in. The other place said led him, or so forth. That shows that the characteristic of a servant. And the a servant is not usually given the luxury of, doing what I'm supposed to when I want to, and when I'll be there, boss, when I want to. Well, some have tried that, but eventually sometimes you don't even get to have the job of a servant.
You're at the beck and call of the master, if you're a true servant.
And so that's, he did that.
Would you think God could do that?
He can, he did.
He did in this man.
Then Luke, he gives him as another side in announcing him. And that's the one we've just had at Christmas. Maybe I don't need to read all those, because you probably, if you ever went to any Christmas program or your Sunday school class or anything, you probably heard these verses. I hope so. That's better than jingle bells and stuff like that, I think, to really mark the man. And so you find the term peace, I believe, about 19 times in Luke. And peace was made by man and for man. This man made peace. So often, well, Paul addressed almost always his epistles, and Peter too. One of their addresses to the assemblies was, well, grace and peace. It's a tremendous thing, showing that's what he has brought to us. And so let's see some of the announcements concerning that. I have some rather long no, it's not so long there. So let's go in Luke and see. Chapter 1, verse 79. Now this is Zacharias, after Zacharias in chapter 1 of Luke, after he took his chastisement for doubting the angel's word about the birth of this son that he was to have. And so then after that, he was after his son was born and the Christ child, the mention of him, he was privileged to announce that one of the important things he would bring would be peace to the people of Israel. So that would be in Luke 1:79, verse 79, chapter 1, verse 79. There never has, there isn't, there will never be any peace, real peace among mankind, except as they submit to this man. He made peace with God. You don't even have peace. People don't have peace with God. They don't have peace with themselves. They don't have peace with anybody else. I mean, really. There's an accommodation. There's a subjection to try to subdue some things. But down inside, there's that churning and that sometimes apprehension. There's an apprehension of the future. I don't care who you are. The only way you can deal, I mean, I can understand with death. How could you deal with it? I just don't understand how people do. They really, what they do is somehow learn a way to avoid it, to kind of try to put it out. Because there is no answer to see someone that you've had even fellowship, a relationship, there's no answer to it. It's over. So what was it for? Well, there is peace. There's a future. If we don't get comprehend that we have a future when we're here, I don't think we'll ever have peace. And we have a future, and it's because of this man. Then we had, let's go to Luke 2:14. You see it was announced by, at least from this time, in this present status which we're in, by a higher class being than us, or beings, as we well know from the Christmas story, as it's called. Look, let's go to Luke 2, verse 14. Well, I guess we should have read the other one. Who was it said that in the previous verse? Yeah, the angel, then a lot of angels, a multitude of the heavenly hosts, apparently were many angels. That's really a sublime scene. These great creatures of God, these are the good angels. They're paying homage to this one they had known as God, and now they see him as a child, as a babe. And they have no doubt what he's bringing. Peace, goodwill toward men. They've changed that around to men of goodwill, but that's still that old legal attitude, isn't it? He's only give peace to you if you're all right. If you're all right, no, it's goodwill. It's God's. That's this man came showing God's goodwill toward them. He's for us, and the devil spends most of his time trying to tell us he isn't for us. Simeon was a man of age. He was an old man. Chapter 2:25. I've got 25-32. Well, let's just read a verse or two. You remember that's the one that came in when they brought Christ into the temple when he was just a babe to make the sacrifice as they would for a newborn. And so they
this man came in and was privileged to see the child. Now there's where he mentioned him as another one of his names. And that would be, he was promised he would not see the death before he'd seen the Lord's Christ, so which means anointed. He saw him, and it's marvelous, he saw in that baby, he called him the Lord's Christ and salvation. He saw salvation there. But let's read just verse 29, the words of Simeon the elderly man. And where was he going when he departed? Going home for supper? Maybe he was going to the real home, yeah. In other words, he'd been promised he would not see death. And I said, I'm willing to go. I'd be willing anyway, but... Well, that shows the goodness of God, too, isn't it? He didn't have to do that. It wouldn't have made it any better or worse for Simeon, but while he was here, perhaps he'd heard so long, and he would like to see this child. And he got to. And he saw him as one that would bring him peace, everlasting peace, and everybody else that would accept him. So in John 1:1-2, we see the last of the Gospels that announce him. And as we said, John represents Christ as God. Son of God, yes, but as God, too. Because verse 1-2, it doesn't say anything about sonship or fatherhood. But see how it says, John chapter 1, verse 1-2. Could you unscramble that to any rational conclusion? No, not unless you believe the way it's presented. He was the Word, the living expression of God. He was with God, so he wasn't by himself. And yet, he was God. And whatever went on in the beginning, he was there. Gives you a little different idea of the Christ. What he was, still is. So he's presented as the deity. And then the announcer of him, there was given one man of all the people that were in the earth, in Israel particularly, one man was given the privilege to announce him in a special way. And that was John the Baptist with the announcer. And he was prophesied in Malachi 3:1 about John the Baptist. So let's turn to Malachi 3, verse 1. Your last book of the Old Testament makes a great prophecy about both the announced Son of God joining and the announcer of him. I think it's in the same verse. So the messenger of the covenant was Christ, but the one that was sent before him to prepare the way was John the Baptist, a very special man. And he was... better not even get into that, because there's no way you can understand the way his career was ended. From the very trash heap of humanity, he was killed. He won't be sorry, because Jesus referred, said there's none greater. So you can take your choices. We all have our choices. You ever had anybody in the scripture like, well, I think that's the greatest one. My way in that, when I read about one a while, that's the greatest one, but I'll get on somebody else. Well, that was the greatest. Well, here's the greatest. There's none greater anyway. Maybe there's equals. All of those that we see? That's what Jesus said, and that's he's the one that expresses truth without any chance of denial. But the thought of him was originally in Isaiah, given chapter 40, one of the prestigious. Well, I don't know if you can use that term. At least he's one of the most prolific and most extensive of all prophets was Isaiah. Well, he was prophesied of this John the Baptist too. The announcer is given quite a background at John or Isaiah prophesied of this remarkable man who would be announcing the remarkable man. Well, we'll go on our break now and have the next lesson about the birth itself.